Now, as with all cults, deception plays a major role in Freemasonry, and unfortunately, many Christians have been deceived as to the true nature of this seemingly upstanding group and its affiliates, including the Eastern Star, Rainbow Girls, and Demolay for Boys. For men, it all begins in the Blue Lodge, containing the first 3 degrees of Masonry, and can progress to the York Rite, the Scottish Rite, Grotto, and the Shriners. Let me make it clear, we do not question the sincerity of the average Mason. Most joined in order to spread good in their communities. But the teachings and goals of those in power is in many places antithetical to the command set down by the one true God of the Bible. Joining us to begin the program is Tom McKinney. Tom is an author who has written the life story of one of the highest-ranking Masons ever to leave the Lodge after becoming a Christian. In addition, Tom's father was a York Rite Mason and a Shriner. The first question I asked him was how he became involved in his study of the Masons.
About 10 years ago, after I did meet the Lord, and incidentally I was 40 years old when I met the Lord as a result of disability in Vietnam and being helpless for the first time in my life, my family and I were trying to help a young guy to put the pieces of his life back together in the Lord, and he was a subculture hippie, a drug addict kind of a kid, and one night he brought in this little book, a little blue book, and he said, "Man, this book has got some heavy stuff in it, and I want you to read it." And he said, "It's a Masonic book. It's a secret book. I'm not even supposed to have it." I saw immediately that the writer, who was one of Masonry's most respected philosophers, was saying that Jesus is not unique. Now, he was saying it in a slightly oblique way, but he was saying it. He was saying that every great civilization has had its myth of a Messiah, that it was typical for him to be born of a virgin, nothing unusual about that. Typically, he was put to death by wicked men and raised from the dead and performed miracles and had disciples and taught them. And I saw what he was saying immediately, and so I read on. A couple pages later, I saw the most remarkable thing, and it stopped me in my tracks. He said, the Chinese called him Lao Tse, the Persians called him Sosiash, the Scandinavians called him Balder, the Hindus' Messiah is Krishna, the Christians' Messiah is Jesus, and the Masons' Messiah is Hiram. And I said, time out, stop, wait, right here. This is interesting. If the Christians' Messiah is Jesus, and he certainly is, but the Masons' Messiah is not Jesus, but is instead some guy named Hiram, I want to know who this Hiram is. I want to know more about this. And that's what launched me, excuse me, into the study of Freemasonry, and I have been a student of it for about 10 years.
Well, I can understand why such a revelation would stimulate a study of Freemasonry, but I know many Christian men, true followers of Christ, who would never accept such philosophy. Now, I know that the local lodge, which is called the Blue Lodge, is where the vast majority of Masons stop their ascension in Masonry.
Well, 95% perhaps of all Masons never go beyond this. In other words, their total Masonic experience is limited to the first 3 degrees. These men, this vast majority of sincere men, most of them good men, many of them Christian good men, who pay their dues, that make the whole thing financially possible, they become the power base for the whole system. They believe in it. They support it. They defend it. They go to their graves believing that what they've done is good. These sincere men are deliberately, and I think just outrageously, deceived as to the true nature of what they do. They believe what they're doing is good. It's not. They believe it's based upon the Bible. It's not. They believe it'll make them better Christians if they're Christians. It won't. But they believe that. They believe it's all secret, that none of it's in writing. I have a Masonic library that would fill a couple of those shelves over there. And they not only don't believe I could have those books, they don't believe those books exist. Because part of their blood oath of obligation to become members of the Lodge is to swear never to put any of it in writing. So anyway, yeah, but it is. You can buy it. And so these men are deceived. Albert Pike, and before I say this, I better tell you this, that the Masonry is a system of lessons in religion and morality. They say we make good men better. Of course, that makes no provision for making bad men good, but they say we make good men better. And the lessons in religion and morality are based upon symbolism and the interpretation of symbols. The lessons are interpretations of symbols. So their symbols become extremely important. The right understanding of those symbols is necessary for enlightenment, and that's necessary to get you into the celestial lodge on high. which is their interesting name for heaven. And the central symbol of all is Solomon's temple, the temple of Solomon, and the tools used in its construction and the temple itself and its furnishings. Now, with that as groundwork, I want to tell you about the deception. Albert Pike, who is easily the most important Mason who ever lived, he's easily the preeminent Masonic philosopher and writer of doctrine, said in so many words, matter of fact, you Scottish Rite Masons who have copies of Morals and Dogma can look this up on page 819. And I'm going to quote it, Bob, but I'm also going to paraphrase it so that the non-Masonic listeners can understand. Albert Pike wrote these arrogant, outrageous words. The Blue Degrees, that is the local hometown lodge, the first 3 degrees, are but the portico of the temple. Now, the portico or the porch of the temple was just on the outside. And what he's saying there is that Blue Lodge Masons, 90 to 95% of all of them, are in Masonry, but just barely. They're just in the fringes. And he says the Blue Degrees are but the portico of the temple. A few of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is deliberately misled with false interpretations. Now, if words have any meaning, I think that's outrageous. And he goes on to say, it is not intended that they understand them, but it is intended that they believe they understand them.
Now, in your estimation, from what you've seen, would you say that there is any deception involved in Freemasonry?
Deception in Freemasonry? Not that I know of at all, no. I would say no, absolutely not.
We read the passage together from Morals and Dogma, and he was genuinely surprised by its content. It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine that he understands them. Now, that sounds like deception to me.
Well, I got to agree with you. It certainly does sound like deception.
Now, some Masons at this point would say, well, that was Albert Pike's opinion. That's not what I really believe. I have a brochure which I acquired at the Masonic House of the Temple in Washington, D.C. It was published under the direction of the current Sovereign Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite's Southern Jurisdiction, also known as the Mother Supreme Council of the World. Here's what it says, quote, Albert Pike remains today an inspiration for Masons everywhere. His great book, Morals and Dogma, endures as the most complete exposition of Scottish Rite philosophy. He will always be remembered and revered as the master builder of the Scottish Rite. It doesn't sound as if Albert Pike has lost any credibility with the Masonic hierarchy, even though his reign as Sovereign Grand Commander ended in 1891. Let's join Masonic expert Tom McKinney once again, author of the book The Deadly Deception, which is the Masonic life story of Jim Shaw, the highest-ranking Mason ever to leave and expose the inner workings of Freemasonry. I asked Tom what he was trying to accomplish by writing Jim Shaw's Masonic biography.
Well, I met Jim Shaw. You see, Bob, the world of the study of Freemasonry, certainly Christians who study Freemasonry, is a very small world. And you soon become aware of the other Christians who are also students of Freemasonry. You hear about one another, meet one another, and I heard about Jim Shaw because he was so prominent in this little world. And so a mutual friend insisted that I meet him. So I did. And I immediately realized two things about Jim. One, his story is unique and it needed to be told. And two, I felt sorry for the guy because I found him so alone. He lives on his retirement pay from the city of Miami, where he was a harbor master, and Social Security. And he takes whatever he can save out of that and buys little one-column-inch ads in magazines and newspapers, and he tries to get them in Christian magazines and newspapers. And then if people write to him, and he sends them tapes and tracts and pamphlets and books and hopes that they'll send him back enough money that he can buy another ad and buy some more tapes and buy some more tracts. And that's his life.
So Jim Shaw has dedicated his life to doing all he can to alert people to the dangers that are found in Masonry and the inconsistencies involved for followers of Christ. For example, when a Mason dies, his Masonic brethren conduct a portion of his funeral ceremony. Exact wording may differ slightly from state to state, but here is a quote from the Masonic funeral. This Mason was true to all of our teachings, and the apron he now wears in the casket represents that purity of life and conduct by which he will now gain admission into the celestial lodge above, end quote. Everyone who hears that statement at the funeral gets a heavy inference that salvation, heaven, is earned by following Masonic teachings and a pure life. One former Mason who left the lodge after reading the Bible and becoming a Christian verified that much of the teaching within the lodge implies that salvation is by works.
We were taught to live our lives well, but again, that only showed me a works salvation as opposed to it being a free gift. Now, in Romans, it says if salvation be of works, then it is not of grace. And if it is of grace, then it is not of works. I know it is of grace, and so I wanted nothing to do with something that even inferred that it may be of works.
And herein lies another of the main cases against Freemasonry. No one denies that Masons do many good works, and no one who has studied their authoritative materials denies that there is much truth in what is said and written. The problem lies in what is added to the teachings of Christianity. A Christian can find plenty of material and teaching with which he agrees, but if he looks at those same materials, in many cases he will also find lots of talk about other religions mixed in with the teachings of the Bible. In fact, whereas the Bible is on the altar in most American lodges, around the world and in certain lodges within this country, the Bible is not the book on the altar because Christianity is not the chosen religion of the men in the lodge. Here again is our Masonic guest, who is a 32nd degree holder in the Scottish Rite, Knight Templar in the York Rite, and also a Shriner. He explains what he has been told about the book on the altar.
As far as I'm concerned, I was told that the Holy Bible is the Great Rite Masonry. They did not say it could be the Koran or the Torah or the Book of Mormon or the Jehovah's Witness, whichever Bible they have out at the time, but it is the Holy Bible, the Scriptures.
So you would not recognize a Masonic lodge which is comprised of Muslims with the Koran on the altar or a Hindu lodge with the Vedas as a true lodge?
Not the way Masonry was explained to me. And in our obligations that we take, we're told that as Masons, we're not allowed to attend other lodges that are considered clandestine. And to me, it would be a clandestine lodge.
So a Christian may be told to acknowledge only those lodges which have the Bible on the altar. He is told to see what he agrees with and to ignore that with which he does not agree. But is that truly what the institution of Masonry teaches? Once again, I will quote from the Masonic hierarchy's own chosen authority, Albert Pike. On page 11 of Morals and Dogma, it says this, quote, "The Bible is an indispensable part of the furniture of a Christian lodge only because it is the sacred book of the Christian religion, the Hebrew Pentateuch in a Hebrew lodge, and the Koran in a Mohammedan one belong on the altar, and one of these, and the square and the compass, which are central Masonic symbols, properly understood, are the great lights by which a Mason must walk and work. The obligation, which is what Masonry calls its oaths, the obligation of the candidate is always to be taken on the sacred book or books of his religion, that he may deem it more solemn and binding." So Freemasonry seeks to absorb people of all religions into itself, a more enlightened worship of the one true great architect of the universe, whom we all supposedly serve under whatever name we may use. But it is not possible to blend the worship of the one true God with other religions. The Bible makes that point abundantly clear in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Judges. As our discussion continued, I asked Tom McKinney about the Masonic view of God.
Their view of God. In the Masonic doctrine, in the Masonic philosophy, the Masonic concept of God is that whatever you consider to be God is God. And of course, we know better. I mean, if we're Christians, we should know better.
All right, how about Jesus Christ?
And this is for me the central point. What are you going to do about Jesus? That's why I made him item one in the appendix on doctrinal comparisons. In Masonic theology, Jesus was just a man. One of the great ones, but just a man. Not divine, not inspired. But on the same level with Mohammed, Joseph Smith, Emanuel Swedenborg.
How about their view of redemption?
The redemption by works. Masonic theology, again, teaches salvation by works. And I think we made reference earlier to the Masonic burial ceremony where they refer to the fact that this departed brother will make it into the lodge on high because of his virtuous life and his faithfulness to the obligation.
Now, once again, what kind of proof do you have for this foundation of Masonic doctrine?
Oh, in the book, Bob, you certainly don't, I think it'd be laborious for the listeners to go into this and read all these quotes, but in the book, the first 80% of the book is the true story of Jim Shaw. And I wrote it as a first-person narrative so the reader can enter into it and experience it with him. What he saw, what he heard, what he felt, the good and the bad. And then about the last 10 or 15% of the book is in the form of five factual appendices. And in their summaries of facts about Freemasonry. And the first one is Masonic Doctrine Compared with the Bible. And I organized it according to topics of basic Christian belief and documented the Masonic position, book, chapter, and verse, to the Masonic sources, not Christian books, but Masonic books, revered Masonic books, and even quoted.
For several months now, Tom has been traveling the country speaking on local radio and television talk shows in an attempt to expose the truth about Freemasonry. And I asked him to talk about some of the successes he's had on the air.
Yeah, of course, I think they're kind of few. The successes could be expected to be, and here's why. Because when the truth is presented to someone whose heart is already committed to the rightness of what he's doing, even when his mind sees that it's wrong, it's been my experience that it takes a while for his heart to let go. It's not easy. It's like coming out of a cult. There's a time required to get completely free. And it's like a false doctrine that you've embraced. When you see that it's false, it's still hard to let go with your heart. Anyway, the immediate successes are kind of necessarily few, but some have been wonderful. The usual feedback I get from Masons immediately is one of anger. And they'll usually say, you don't know what you're talking about. And they'll give me some emotional generality to that effect. And then I'll answer their questions with facts, book, chapter, and verse quoted right out of their own publications. And it seems to bounce off their heads, and they'll come back to me with the very same emotional generalities again. However, I have to believe that the truth spoken to them is getting in somehow, and sooner or later will take effect. I remember one day on a call-in talkback show that covers all of central Mississippi and maybe part of Louisiana, Alabama, a man very, very angry called me and threatened the station for having someone like me on the air. And he was serious. But then I also remember a young man in Kansas City, a 32nd degree Mason, who called in to fuss at me, and he said he was really angry and grieved that I was saying these things on the radio. And he said, I can't believe you're saying this stuff on the radio. These are secrets. And you know they aren't, Bob. There's only one well-kept Masonic secret, and that is that there are no Masonic secrets. There has only been one, I guess, since 1830, and that's because there was no 33rd degree in those days, and it was a secret until we published this book. But he said it really hurt him and made him mad, but he also said he was a Christian. And I could tell, I bore witness with the man's spirit, that he was. And he said, and he would fuss at me for a while, and then he would say, but you know there are things about it that bother me. And then he would fuss at me some more, and he would say, but you know, there are some things about it that troubled me from the start, like drinking wine out of a human skull in the Scottish Rite. And I agreed with him, and you know, I think that should trouble a Christian, don't you? I think it should trouble a Christian to get initiated into the first degree, where you have to confess that you're in absolute spiritual darkness, you're lost and naked and undone, and without God, and you call upon them to bring you out of darkness into spiritual light. I think that should bother a Christian, but anyway, he was so sincere. And he said, I want to know more about this. How can I find out more? And I told him he could just go get a copy of this book. Every Christian bookstore in Kansas City had the book. But he said he was afraid to be seen buying that book. Now, there is some fear, and there's a basis for real fear. And this man was a 32nd degree Mason, and I said, well, look, I'll give you a copy. Come to the radio station. He said, no, he was afraid to be seen with me. And so I asked him his name, and he was afraid to tell me, but he told me his first name. And it was like a little spy episode. I told him that I would inscribe a copy of the book to him by his first name and leave it with the receptionist at the radio station, and he could give me time to be gone, and then he could come by and pick the book up. It was like a drop in a spy movie, and he did. And I went on to other programs that day, and that night he somehow found me in my motel room on the telephone and called me. And he said he had only read half the book, but he was already free. And I could tell by the sound of his voice, he was just rejoicing. He was just like a totally changed person. That's so far the best experience, one of the best I've had of this kind.
90 to 95% of all Masons go only as far as the third or Master Mason's degree. Here now is a former Master Mason explaining the circumstances surrounding his initiation.
Well, I was born, you know, I was in Indianapolis. That's where I'm from originally. And my father was master of the lodge. And it was on the 50th anniversary of the lodge. And I was the only candidate. And it was quite rewarding. It really was. My father and myself both, when I went into the lodge on that one particular day, both had tears in our eyes. In other words, it brought, you know, this was a close fellowship type thing with my father, you know.
Masonic expert Tom McKinney, who has written the life story of Jim Shaw, the highest-ranking Mason to have resigned from Freemasonry and become a Christian, concurs that family and tradition have a lot to do with men joining Freemasonry.
Many men join because it's kind of expected of them. It's a family tradition, Bob, especially in the South. It's almost a thing you do. You know, you wouldn't think of not doing it. And I think you told me before the broadcast that your grandfather was a dedicated Mason and that he urged you, and perhaps other men in your family urged you, to get into the lodge. That's one reason. A lot of them just do it because it's an assumption that they will. And it's like going to the same university your ancestors have gone to for six generations. And another reason that men join the lodge, and this is a very, very common one, is for business, professional, and political advantage. Now, theoretically, they're not supposed to do that. And it is a fact that before they're initiated into the Blue Lodge, they will be asked if this is why they're doing it. And most of them have already been coached to know the right answer. The right answer is no. But any Mason who is honest will tell you that this is why lots of them do. As a matter of fact, in politics, it's almost like touching the bases. You know, you just almost can't be elected to public office if you're not. That's one reason. In business, it's no secret that there are business advantages. Contracts are awarded, better territories are given, promotions are given, etc., simply because the man is a Mason. This was Jim Shaw's experience. He was amazed at his advancement on the job, but it was because he was a Mason.
Aside from the social aspects of being a Mason, some men, like Jim Shaw, participate in it for other reasons. Tom McKinney explains what Jim found when he joined the lodge.
He found a family. He found friends. He found a social setting for his life. He found a philosophy and an approach to life. He found an opportunity for community service. He found an opportunity to be recognized and to advance. But most important of all, he found a religion. And he found in the lodge the religion of the lodge, and that is nothing else but a modern revival of the ancient mystery religions of Egypt, the worship of Isis and Osiris. And he deliberately embraced this as his religion, and along with the doctrine of reincarnation. And he learned it all in the lodge.
A brief injection here now. Many of the Masons who could be listening are saying, ancient pagan religions connection. I don't see that at all.
Sure.
So briefly, just...
Okay. If we'll read their own books and take them at face value, and if words have any meaning, then you'll find that Albert Pike, Albert Mackey, J.D. Buck, Daniel Sickles, and all of the prominent, credible Masonic writers of doctrine will tell you that Freemasonry is a modern-day revival of the Egyptian mystery religions of Isis and Osiris. Now, it should be obvious to the Blue Lodge Mason, because all through the Blue Lodge ritual and the lessons in the lodge are references to Egypt. There are women's groups, like auxiliary groups, like the Order of the Eastern Star. But there's another one almost as large called the Daughters of the Nile, and still another called the Daughters of Isis. And it always makes me scratch my head that these respectable, good Christian women who dress up in their pretty dresses and light candles and hang ribbons and go through their rituals in the lodge are the daughters of Isis, and they don't realize that Isis was the Egyptian goddess of lust and fertility, and her rituals in the temple were sexual.
Now, the biggest thing that I think we need to inject here again is the fact that this, again, is a matter more of not willful disobedience to Christianity,
no,
but ignorance.
It's ignorance, which, of course, is an offensive word to some people, but it shouldn't be. It doesn't mean they can't learn. It just means they haven't. The truth has been kept from them. Albert Einstein was ignorant of Freemasonry. He knew nothing of Freemasonry, but he certainly wasn't dull of mind. Yeah, they don't know, and they are deliberately deceived. And yet the devil is kind of brassy, too. They call the thing Daughters of the Nile, Daughters of Isis. They refer to them, to these Egyptian gods and goddesses, in the ritual.
The deception in Freemasonry is not merely inferred, it is written down. Several instances are found in the book Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike. Some Masons would claim that Pike is not an authority, but let me read from a brochure prepared under the direction of current Sovereign Grand Commander Fred Kleinkenecht. Quote, Brother Pike used his vast talents to research and rewrite the rituals, making them eloquent, symbolic representations of our rites, history, and philosophy. Albert Pike remains today an inspiration for Masons everywhere. His great book, Morals and Dogma, endures as the most complete exposition of Scottish Rite philosophy. One high-ranking Mason with whom I spoke claimed that the first 3 degrees, or the Blue Lodge, contained all of Freemasonry, and thus the Scottish and York rites plus the shrine are just, he said, whipped cream for the craft of Freemasonry. Apparently, he too has been deceived. On page 819 of Morals and Dogma, after explaining how Blue Lodge Masons are intentionally misled by false interpretations of Masonic symbols, Pike says this, quote, It is well enough for the mass or bulk of Masons to imagine that all is contained in the Blue Degrees, and whoso attempts to undeceive them will labor in vain. End of quote. The deceit is in print for all Masons to see. And the intent of this program is to help Christian brothers to recognize this deception and to urge Christians who are Masons to examine what it is that they're supporting with their time and their money. One area we have yet to discuss is secrecy. Encyclopedia Britannica lists Freemasonry as the world's largest secret society. I talked about this aspect of the lodge with a third degree or Master Mason. Obviously, there are some secrets of the organization which they tell you that you shouldn't reveal. In fact, one of the builders of Masonry said secrecy is indispensable in a Mason of whatever degree. And I'm just curious, for a fraternal organization, why does there need to be secrecy?
It's a good question. I can't answer that. I really can't.
And yet, for each degree, Masons must take an oath vowing that they will never reveal the secrets of the organization contained in that degree. In Matthew chapter 5, starting with verse 34, Jesus spoke about oaths, saying this, quote, I tell you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, and do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. Simply let your yes be yes, and your no, no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Here's Tom McKinney.
For each degree, there is what's called an oath of obligation. Masons usually just call this the obligation. And it's terribly important. As a matter of fact, in their catechism, they are asked the question, what makes you a Mason? The answer is, my obligation. So if they say, oh, I didn't take that oath seriously, they should have. Because they take it, so help me God and keep me steadfast, and it's the thing that makes them a Mason. But anyway, there are 3 of these oaths in the Blue Lodge because there are 3 degrees. And for each degree, the oath of obligation is a promise to protect all the secrets and, incidentally, to do other things which are interesting, like protect the secrets of other Masons, even if it means to conceal a crime. And in the first 2 degrees, it says treason and murder excepted. In the 3rd degree, it says treason and murder left to the discretion of myself. And in the higher degrees, it says with no exceptions. But that's another story. So they take these oaths, and in each one, they agree that if they should violate any of the secrets, they offer themselves up to be put to death in horrible ways. In the 1st degree, to have your throat cut across, your tongue torn out by the roots, buried in the rough sands of the sea where the tide ebbs and flows twice in 24 hours and so forth. That's fatal. In the 2nd degree, to have your left breast torn open and your heart plucked out and given as a prey to the birds of the air and the fowl and the beasts of the field. And that's fatal. And in the 3rd degree, you agree to have your body severed in twain, cut in half, your bowels removed and burned to ashes and scattered to the 4 winds of heaven. That's very fatal. And they're hideous, ugly, ugly oaths. And for every degree, Bob, there is one such oath. If you have become a 32nd degree Mason, you've taken 32 of those oaths. If you are a Shriner, you've taken still another, in which you say that you will have your eyes pierced to the center with a 3-edged blade, your feet flayed, which means cut to ribbons, and then forced to walk in the burning sands by the Red Sea until you're struck dead with a livid plague. Just awful things. If you're like Jim Shaw, if you're like Jim Shaw and you're a 33rd degree Mason, who was also a Shriner, who was also in the Order of the Eastern Star, you've taken 35 such oaths. One for each degree.
When a Mason takes his first oath, he has no idea what he will be swearing to. And adding to the confusion of a Mason's initiation is the fact that the oath is very long and broken up into short phrases which the initiate has to repeat. And it's difficult afterward to know exactly what you've sworn. The oath that men must take to become a Shriner is a good example of what we're talking about. In it, the oath taker swears a solemn oath to, and I quote, Allah, the God of Arab, Muslim, and Mohammedan, the God of our fathers. The oath also contains the words, Whoso seeketh Islam, earnestly seeks true direction. How any Christian, informed or not, can utter such words is almost beyond comprehension. The Shriner whom I interviewed became a Shriner before his commitment to Christ and could not recall his initiatory oath.
I have no idea of ever doing that. Maybe I have, but I don't know. But I certainly wouldn't do it today.
So obviously, if you were asked today to take this oath, you would not be able to.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
The most recent denomination to do a study on the Freemasons was the Presbyterian Church in America. I asked Jack Scott, who was the chairman of the PCA's investigating committee, if he was surprised by anything that he found.
Well, I was surprised how strongly Freemasons felt about Freemasonry. I was surprised at some of the things that I learned about it in terms of the teachings that were popularized by a good many Freemasonry writers, the fact that many of the Presbyterian Freemasons, including many of our elders, had very great difficulty seeing any problem whatsoever with it, while our committee was concerned a great deal about the fact that Freemasonry seemed to equate the views of various religions such as the Hindu and Mohammedan and Christian views of God as though there was no great distinction among those views. Some of these things were of great concern to the committee, but I think basically our basic concern was that the commitment of those people to Freemasonry in many cases seemed to be greater than their commitment, at least to the Presbyterian Church. Some of them were very strong about it and said that they would prefer to leave the PCA to accepting any decision that was not favorable to Freemasonry. And it's hard for me to understand how a Christian can feel that way about any other organization. In contrast to the church.
Cult expert Dr. Walter Martin, who passed away in June of 1989, states here whether a Christian can also be a Mason.
The answer is yes. A Christian can be a member of Freemasonry, and there are lots of Christians, including many in my own denomination, the Southern Baptists, which are members of Masonry, and a lot of ministers involved are Masons. Yes, you can be, but the real question behind that is, do they understand what Masonry really is teaching in these levels? Well, if they're deceived above the third level, then they really haven't gotten a great deal of information. And they're being willfully misled. So what we have to do is to show them what really is going on in the levels above them and all of this esoteric material which is in there, which is anti-Christian. Then you can ask the question, if a person has really been exposed to Masonry and its highest levels and fully understands that it is occultic and esoteric and has hidden, secret, and mysterious things which are antithetical to the Bible, directly opposite biblical Christianity, then can they remain a Mason? And I would say, in good conscience, no.
Robert Morey has written more than 20 books, many of them dealing with the clash of false religion and Christianity. He also has done extensive study on the Masons and agrees that Christians can be members of the Lodge, but they should not be.
Yes, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church in Orlando, Florida, where it was assumed that as soon as a young man became old enough, he joined the Masons. The deacons were Masons, everybody was running around and joining, and it was assumed that this was something you did just for the fun of it and comradeship. And because there were so many Christians involved, that particular lodge had Bible reading, and they would read into the Masonic literature their Christian concept of God. But the fact that you can have a Jewish lodge, a Muslim lodge, you can have any kind of lodge, and you can read into that literature any kind of concept of God that you want, means that Masonry is not distinctively Christian. It is actually a modern form of the old Gnostic mystery religions that tried to absorb any dominant religion that was around. It's like a chameleon. So if Masonry is in Islamic world, they say we believe in Allah. If it's in the Christian world, then they say we believe in Jesus. If it's in a Buddhist country, well, then they say we believe in Buddha. So it's a chameleon that constantly tries to change and absorb whatever the dominant religion is, which reveals that it has its own hidden religious concept.
And some people might say, well, if I can just adapt it to Christ, then what's wrong with that?
Well, again, you see, as you go through the various degrees, even to enter in and to say you were in darkness and that now you need the light is blasphemous. If you're a child of God, you are already in the light. And to join any secret organization, how can that be viewed as becoming a person of light? And to take those dreadful oaths and curses that may you be slit and de-gutted, and if you ever tell the secrets, how in the world can a child of God ever possibly give such terrible oaths as are required by the Masonic organization?
I would like to stress that there is no doubt that many things in Masonic rituals and documents, especially within the York Rite, can have a striking Christian message. But the problem is that teachings from other religions, especially the ancient Egyptian mysteries, are included as well, many times on the same page as the Christian teachings. And men who become Masons before committing their lives to Christ generally are not bothered or convicted by the oaths they have sworn or the doctrines Masonry represents. Masonry accommodates whatever religion is dominant in a culture and adds its own abominable mixture of the ancient mystery religions of On, Osiris, and Baal. And a Christian's participation in it lends credibility to the full scope of the message. Here again is Walter Martin.
All I can tell a Mason is I don't doubt your sincerity and I don't doubt your integrity, and I'm not attacking you. What I'm saying is that the basic philosophy and the theology of Masonry is opposed to historic Christianity. If you call yourself a Christian, you owe it to your allegiance to Jesus Christ and to His Word to check out what Masonry teaches in contrast to what Christianity states. And therefore, you should not be involved in this. It is, very interestingly enough, Kabbalistic. And that's forbidden in the Old Testament, forbidden to the Christian as well. It is an attack upon the actual accuracy of what God said in the Old Testament, and it's a perversion of it through metaphysics and esoteric teachings. I would say to the Mason out there, take the facts and the evidence. For instance, take a very excellent book by Jim Shaw on the deadly deception. He's the 33rd degree Mason, and has written on this in a very kindly, ironic spirit, in which he says, look, I really believe this. I was deceived by this. Look at the deception. And he spells this all out, and it is a deadly deception. I would say, look at the evidence. Check this with the scriptures. Pray about this seriously if you're a Christian involved in it. And then forsake this. Turn away from this and get rid of all the things that were even remotely connected with it in your life, and just simply repent of having done it. You did it in ignorance, and you will obtain mercy from the Lord. But don't stay in it once you know what it is, because to him that knows to do what is good and doeth it not, for him it is sin.
Tom McKinney also had a final thought for those involved with Freemasonry.
If the listener is a Christian, just learn what Freemasonry really teaches and practices concerning Jesus himself, and you'll find that it cannot be for a Christian. If you're not a Christian, consider the fact that you've been deceived if you're a Mason, or if you're just someone who loves a Mason, the one you love has been deliberately deceived and used. You know, Masonry says we are the only ones with the light, but it's not for everybody. I think that's awful. They say the only pure religion in the world, or the purest religion in the world, is Freemasonry. All the others are just imperfect remnants of the original beauty of the mysteries of Egypt. And so they're saying we're the only guys with the truth, but it's not for everybody. That's like saying I'm the only one with life preservers, but when the ship goes down, I'm only going to give it to a few of my friends. I think that's awful. If there were nothing else wrong with Masonry, that would turn me away.
But obviously, you have a tremendous heart for these men.
Oh, I love them. And I always try to say this, Bob, and if they hear me, they know I mean it. That I'm not, if you're a Mason, I'm not your enemy. I'm your friend. I'm your advocate. Jim Shaw is not your enemy. He's your friend. He's your brother. What we're opposed to is not you. What we're opposed to is the system that has deceived you, deliberately deceived you, victimized you, and used you. That's what we're opposed to. We want to share with you the truth that'll set you free.
And here is a former Master Mason who left the lodge after discovering Jesus Christ.
I know that the Bible was the center, or in the center of the lodge room, and we had a fellow who was an officer, and he would offer prayers. But God was always described as the great architect of the universe. And no idea of salvation through Jesus was taught. So I wanted to stick close to Jesus. And so we severed our ties with Masonry. In my petition for withdrawal, I addressed this letter to each one of the officers who I was friends with. And I said, please believe me. I have no animosity toward you gentlemen, nor any other man in the lodge. It was not you that deceived me. It was the institution of Freemasonry that deceived us both. And people everywhere spend their lives searching for truth. Even Pilate asked, Jesus, what is truth? If you would like for me to share with you gentlemen how I received eternal life and how you can have it too, and please call me. I'm not boastful in that, but I want to share the good news of Jesus Christ, and he is the only means of salvation.
And it is on that thought that we must end our look at the Masonic Lodge. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man can come to the Father but by him, for there is no other name under heaven by which men can be saved. Remember, if you know a Mason in your church or even your family, that does not necessarily mean he is not a Christian. It does mean he has been deceived, and through your prayers, your love, and the truth, you can see him set free. On behalf of Dr. James Kennedy, our executive producer, Kathy Israels, production technician, Fred Passmore, and the entire staff of Coral Ridge Ministries, this is Bob Allen wishing you God's richest blessings and a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Truths That Transform is a production of Coral Ridge Ministries. Views expressed by guests on the program are not necessarily those of Dr. D. James Kennedy, Coral Ridge Ministries, or this station.